Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. It is great to have you in live from star-studded Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. It is nice to have. We're indoors today. Of course, it's California and Los Angeles. That's where we have to be. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Look at the NBA trying to swoop in and steal some headlines during NFL season.
All sorts of tasty stuff in the NBA.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And there was a, let me start with this, though. There was a football game going on last night. Listen, good news, bad news. What do you want to hear first? I'm always a bad news. Just lay it out, okay? I can handle it. I'm a big boy. I'm a grown-up. Don't give me fluff. I'm not looking for whipped cream. Give me the cake. Give me the pie. Let's go. I can take bad news. Pittsburgh Steeler fans, you need to grow up. This is not a Super Bowl team. There it is. Go cry in your terrible towels. This is not a Super Bowl team. You're not. You're 11-0, and it feels hollow. Own it. Mike Tomlin, a man's man, who if you asked him good news or bad news, would say, give me the bad news first. Here's Mike Tomlin, who knows more about the Steelers than all of us, his thoughts on his team.
Mike, you had some red zone failures and a number of drop passes. What do you attribute that to? Anything in particular?
Sucking.
Yeah, that's it. Pittsburgh's not a Super Bowl team. Tennessee's better today? Yeah, they are. I know you beat them, but now Bud Dupree out for the year with an injury. So Devin Bush and Bud Dupree and your front seven both out. You're not stopping King Henry. You're not beating Kansas City. You can't lose two of your best players defensively. I mean, this is a team. Just, I always had this theory. Say it out loud. Before you do something in life, say it out loud. Let's play say it out loud with the Steelers. You can't run the ball. How do you take the ball away from Patrick Mahomes? Run the ball. You can't. You had to throw 51 times last night to beat COVID-19 ravaged Baltimore. You can't run the ball. Oh, by the way, your two best linebackers, arguably two of your top three are out, so you're not going to stop the run as much. Baltimore, again, ran it two times this year against you. You've had the second easiest schedule in the NFL. You face four backup quarterbacks. Let's be honest about the Steelers. You're getting worse, and teams like Seattle are getting better. You're not a Super Bowl team this morning. I mean, good God, you had the ball for 33 minutes. You had to throw 51 times to escape a Baltimore team using a backup quarterback. And I went in this morning and I went and looked at the Steelers, who they've beaten. In week one, they beat Daniel Jones. Well, yeah, he had a new coach who'd never been a head coach, and the Giants started 0-5. Then you beat Drew Locke. Oh, my bad. He got hurt in the game. Jeff Driscoll. And then you had this streak where everybody bought into you. You narrowly edged Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz. You beat Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill, Lamar Jackson. But outside of Tannehill, which one of those guys is playing well now? After that, you beat Garrett Gilbert, Joe Burrow, Jake Luton, and RG3. Just own it. Say it out loud. Most important part of your defense, two huge injuries. You won't stop the run as well. You don't run the ball, meaning you can't keep it away from Patrick Mahomes. Or Josh Allen. I mean, this is the reality of the NFL. Like, I never feel quite this way in baseball and basketball, or maybe even hockey. But in football, we have this component called injuries. And Seattle this morning and the New York Giants are much better than they were in week 2, 3, and 4. And the Chicago Bears, the 49ers, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are not nearly as good as they were in weeks 3, 4, and 5. And that's the reality this morning. And what are they doing well? Kansas City's doing virtually everything well. Seattle now looks like they're starting to put things together. Green Bay, what is Pittsburgh doing well? Ask Mike Tomlin. Here's what he saw last night.
I'm really disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you. And it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. We gave up big plays in critical moments on defense. Can't have it. They converted a long run on a possession down before the half. Unacceptable. They had a 70-yard touchdown late in the game. Unacceptable.
Six of the 11 Pittsburgh wins are one possession. That is with the second easiest schedule in the league and facing four backups. This is, I don't care what their record is. I've never been beholden to records. This, they're getting dropped to about seventh in the Hurd hierarchy. This is not a Super Bowl team. And the problem is what you need to beat Kansas City is a running game, don't have it. And what you need to beat Tennessee is the ability to tackle the best running back in football, and now you don't have it. Devin Bush out earlier this year, Bud Dupree out now. Every bit of this skepticism on the Steelers is completely earned. All right, as Joy said, interesting NBA day. So these two players I've been critical of, Russell Westbrook and John Wall, for different reasons. Yesterday, they got traded for one another. I don't care about the first round draft pick. NBA is a developmental draft pick. Houston will sell that pick off to somebody else. I think many people believe, hey, bad contracts, it's a wash. I do not believe that. I believe the Washington Wizards slam dunk won this trade because I think Russell Westbrook is significantly better than John Wall. I'll just let you know this, that 9 of 12 years Russell Westbrook has been in the NBA, he's made an all-NBA team. In 10 years, John Wall's made it once, and he's falling apart. I've been critical of Russell Westbrook. He can drive me crazy in the playoffs. But in the last 37 games of the NBA's regular season last year, oh, by the way, it was third-team All-NBA, 30 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 50% field goals, and 77.5 from the free throw line. What was John Wall doing? An Achilles surgery off a heel injury. He hasn't played in 2 years. And whereas Westbrook's game is hyper-athletic, he's 32, I still get that. Wall's game is hyper-speed. Off these surgeries, I don't think I get it. Yes, both guys are expensive. Yes, both guys' contracts are brutal. Yet neither guy can hit a three. Yes, neither guy I love. They're not the classic point guard. But with Russell Westbrook, I get a healthier player. I get a better player. And here's another thing that matters. Russell Westbrook is completely obsessed with basketball. One of the reasons he wanted out of Houston, because he said the culture was too loose. He's acknowledged, my best friend is the basketball. He's got his issues, but I'm a big fan of his passion. Nobody plays harder in the league than Russell Westbrook. John Wall, when he was healthy, was often indifferent. Listen, these guys are both on the back nine, but Westbrook's like walking up to the 11th tee box. Wall's headed to the 15th fairway. I think Westbrook is a first ballot Hall of Famer who drives me nuts, but I'm not so sure he's out of his prime. I'm really not. I think he's one of these guys that's had an incredibly long prime. I just think genetics, DNA, Westbrook is one of the most athletic players in league history. I don't think he's slowing down. My issue with him is his flaws he can't correct. It's who he is. John Wall, way past his prime, and I was never a huge fan of it. And here's something else that matters. In the East, Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal will be incredibly relevant. John Wall in the point guard heavy West is a non-story in Houston. And in this NBA league we have, relevance matters. Westbrook and Bradley Beal are going to make the playoffs. Russell Westbrook's won a lot of big games and played in a lot of big games, even last year. I don't believe this is like two bad contracts being exchanged. Listen, they're not good contracts. I'm not arguing that. But to me, this is a slam dunk. For all my criticisms of Westbrook, he is basketball obsessed. John Wall often seems indifferent. He's still maybe the best athlete outside of LeBron in the league. John Wall, built on speed, is coming off another surgery. One guy is going to the weaker West. He's the better player. Less of a player is going to the point guard rich East. Slam dunk for Washington. I don't think it's just a... If you go to Westbrook's last 35, 36, 37 games, he's all NBA. Again, he struggled to correct his flaws. But you're being dishonest intellectually if you don't think Westbrook's got game. You're in the history. Look, how many people on the planet? 9 billion. He made third team all NBA. And that's in a league, by the way, where there's never been this many good guards. I mean, there are teams that have like, it's insane. Like Steph and Clay are the best backcourt of all time. Now this year they won't play because Clay's hurt, but there's like 12 to 15 incredible backcourts. The game is international. You got guys now 6'7" playing point. And Russell Westbrook is third team all NBA and doesn't appear to be out of his prime. So way to go, Washington. And by the way, James Harden, there's a story out this morning that James Harden preferred John Wall over Russell Westbrook. I'm over Harden telling me who he prefers because we keep rolling out people for him. He doesn't get along with any of them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
When you win in the NFL, it's like, remember that thing Whiteout? If you were typing and they had Whiteout, it's like LeBron's the human eraser. If you have problems, like LeBron just sort of erases all that. Winning is sort of the solution to all your like drama and problems. The Miami Dolphins are winning. Tua, I just want to throw this out. In his first month as a starter, Tua was benched and got hurt. Nobody's talking about it. He got benched and he got hurt. Hurt in high school, hurt in college. Oh boy, hurt in the pros. And his passing totals for Tua in the first four games are 93 yards, 248, 109, and 83. Or is it 169? He's averaging under 150 yards per start. And whereas there's a lot of wow with these young quarterbacks, Kyler Murray's legs, wow. Lamar Jackson's speed, wow. Josh Allen's size and arm, wow. Justin Herbert's arm and everything, wow. With Tua, and like a Dak Prescott, it is, well, they're winning. And that's something. But Miami is in a very interesting place. And I want you to, for a second, you're Brian Flores. You run the team. So by April, late April, the Jets are going to have Trevor Lawrence. Wow. The Bills already have Josh Allen. Wow. And Belichick's the best coach in football. You will have Tua. And Tua's strengths, and this is not arguable, the two things we know about him at every level, accurate and he gets hurt. Now, accuracy matters. It is something. And Brian Flores may be thinking, hey, my defense, I'm a better defensive coach than everybody in this league except Belichick. I just want an accurate guy who doesn't turn it over. I want Drew Brees. I don't need wow. I don't need massive arm. But it's a very interesting situation because Miami has Houston's first round pick and Houston just lost their wide receiver and corner to like PEDs. So Houston's going to be really bad for the next month, despite Deshaun Watson. What does that mean? Miami may have the fifth or sixth pick in this draft. That's the last time Brian Flores is going to have a top five or six pick. This is it. And it is a awesome quarterback draft. This is why I believe you play Tua. You're not going to have the fifth or sixth pick in the draft. Brian Flores is too good of a coach. He's built too good of a defense. They got too much momentum. And they're getting more. I mean, they have draft capital, endless draft capital. So it's a fascinating place. Does Brian Flores look at this and think to himself, okay, here's what I know with Tua. He doesn't throw picks. He didn't throw them in high school. He threw 11 picks at Alabama total. He doesn't throw them in the NFL. And he thinks there's not a lot of wow there, but I get Drew Brees, I get accurate, I get no mistakes, and I can win with defense. But just remember, by late April, Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen are in your division with each about a 12 to 15 year runway. That's what you're, if you stay in Miami for 15 years, you will have the less of an arm, arguably less mobile quarterback. It's fascinating. And you have a draft pick from Houston you may never have again in your career. You know, Patriots don't draft top three very often. It just doesn't happen. So kind of fascinating. Tua in his first month, benched and hurt, and nobody's talking about it. Like you can't tell me they're not thinking about it. This is why you can win with Ryan Fitzpatrick I would put Tua out there. Even if it costs me a game, put him out there.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's go to Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich, NFL Films, 41 years there. If you bet it, if you do fantasy, if you love football, he's my favorite. He is now joining us live. By the way, just thinking something off the top of my head. Years ago, you and I were at San Diego.
Yeah.
You remember the Steve Clark's camp?
Without question, I remember well.
And I asked you, and to your credit, I said, Greg, I'm going to lean on you. I watched Mitch Trubisky. I do not understand it. And you said to me, he's a front leg thrower. This is probably not going to be great. You were way early on. Everybody was falling in love with him. And you said, Colin, I've looked at tape. Front leg thrower, the ball's going to die. And you, nobody, I always refer to that if I talk to scouts. I'm like, Cosell told me. So to your credit, now I want to talk about another quarterback who I think is more talented, but he is struggling. It is Lamar Jackson. And yes. I've said, can he break through whatever this is? People get film, they throw stuff at you. What if you're Baltimore, what would concern you about Lamar?
Well, I think where you have to get to with Lamar, and I've always believed this, Bill Walsh was the one who taught me this, really, Colin. You have to get to a point where your pass game and your run game can work independently of one another. And what happens in the NFL, because there's really smart coaches, is they figure out how to better defend the multidimensional run game of the Ravens. As good as Greg Roman is, and he may be as good as there is in designing run game concepts, but defensive coordinators figure it out. So now you have to be able to throw the football, and you have to be able to throw the football independent of all those run game concepts in any given game. So now you get to a drop back passing game in which you have to be able to understand your concepts in complete detail and understand defensive concepts in complete detail. That's how quarterbacks are able to eliminate what's not there quickly and isolate what is there quickly within the structure of the offense and a comfort level in the pocket. He is not at that point. So what happens is, because he's always been able to rely on his legs, is he now moves prematurely. He leaves the pocket prematurely at times. And yes, he'll make some special runs because he's that special, but he will also leave a lot of throws on the field that are there.
Kansas City can win multiple ways. They can win finesse. They can win power. That is generally rare. Generally, there's ways teams can win. And the Browns, Titans play this week. And they do feel like there's a certain formula for them to win. The running game's excelling. And I think Tennessee is a better version of Cleveland. What does the film say?
Well, you're hit it right on the head. They're mirror images of each other philosophically. But I think you're right that overall, the Titans' pass game is better than Cleveland's, more consistent. But both those teams still have to figure out just what I said about the Ravens, how they can throw the football if the run game is not the driving force. I think that Tannehill has shown over the last number of weeks he's done a much better job off the run game of getting to, let's say, his second read, which becomes critical because teams understand where do you want to go with the football off your play-action pass game, and often they'll take it away. So they'll take away, for instance, A.J. Brown on a lot of those in-breakers at times. Then you've got to go somewhere else. And Tannehill's done a better job of that in recent weeks. For instance, hitting Corey Davis, who's become a little more of a volume target in the past two, three games, but not as the number one primary on those plays. So they've done a better job of that. Right now, Baker Mayfield is still struggling. He's very inconsistent. You can see he plays very fast. There's a frenetic movement to him. But then he'll also make two or three throws a game that remind us all why he was the number one pick when he came out of Oklahoma. And so he's still trying to figure out how to be more composed, more comfortable in the pocket, and play just with a little more poise.
There are things that are correctable, and there are things as a quarterback that are not. Jared Goff is in a really bad stretch of turnovers, fumbles, and interceptions. And I've always felt with Goff that when he's comfortable, he's very good. When he's uncomfortable, he's a liability. Are his flaws, Jared Goff, are they correctable?
I would say in answer to that, that Jared Goff is kind of what he is, and I think we all know what he is. I think he's a programmed quarterback who is very system-based. And again, most quarterbacks are. That is not a pejorative negative statement. But he is really like that. So when the system works, and McVay has a phenomenal system, and he can drop back and be comfortable in the pocket, and he gets what he expects coverage-wise, which comes from coaching and play calling, then he looks really good because he throws the ball really well. When he doesn't get that for whatever reason, it could be coverage-based. The Niners did some great things in coverage this week. And Jimmy Ward, by the way, is a really overlooked player in the Niners defense, but they did some really good things in coverage. When he gets pressure where he's not comfortable in the pocket, then his efficiency drops. He's not going to become a different player, Colin. This is who he is. So he becomes very much a function of the scheme.
I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers because I don't really care about awards. I'd give him my MVP. And I don't think he's as good as Mahomes, but I think he's more valuable to his team. So Matt LaFleur comes in, and I thought Matt LaFleur was very good in the first half last year, but young coaches often aren't great after intermission. That's where the Belichicks and Pete Carrolls are. This year, I think Green Bay has done a better job, although they've had some clunkers in the second half, of making adjustments at half. But I will say this. This year, this is the second year with Matt LaFleur. Last year, you could argue, well, he's no better than he was with Mike McCarthy, so it wasn't about Matt. This year, Aaron looks much more comfortable to me.
Yeah.
What are you seeing with him and LaFleur? That's just what it looks like for me. The body language mostly better. Why is he so comfortable?
And you're 100% right, Colin. And think of this. What are we not seeing as much this year with Rodgers that we've become used to seeing him running around and leaving the pocket? We're seeing way less of that. This offense now, this pass game, is a very desirable combination of being highly schemed, where they win with the route concepts, but also Rodgers being very aggressive when he sees one-on-ones. Because when he sees one-on-ones, whether it's on the outside or whether it's, let's say, in the slot, if it's man coverage, he's going to throw that ball. But yet, they're also very schemed, and you see a lot of plays where the design, the concept wins. The touchdown we're seeing right here to Robert Tonyan is a great example of that. So this is now a really good mix. I know people like to say, for whatever it means, that, oh, Rodgers has bought in. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know what's in Aaron Rodgers' head. I can only tell you that the film shows that this offense is really well schemed, but yet Rodgers will be willing to turn it loose anytime he sees those one-on-ones.
So now I want to go to Brady on this, because I said this week, we looked at his numbers, 28 TDs, 11 picks, 94 passer rating, 65 data, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, considering Evans was hurt early, so was Chris Godwin. O.J. Howard leaves. Fournette came right before the season. New coach, new system. I'm like, maybe we're being ridiculous here. He leads the NFL, I believe, in completions. Only Mahomes, only a few of the stars have more yards. And I'm like, are we overanalyzing this? Is Brady actually having a pretty darn good year? Like, what does the film say?
Well, it's a different offense. He's very used to an offense that's very rhythmic-based in terms of quick game-type throws. Three-step drops, bang play action, five-step drops, ball comes out. This is a little bit of a different offense in terms of the vertical element to it. And by vertical, I don't mean throwing the ball 40, 50 yards down the field. So what that means, Colin, is it means you're in the pocket for just a bit longer. Think of it this way, and the audience will be able to appreciate this. Three-step timing is 1.5 seconds, the ball's out. Five-step timing is 2.1 seconds. Seven-step timing is 2.6 seconds. So when you start getting into more of the five-step and the seven-step timing, you're just in the pocket longer, and that changes the timing, and it changes your mental clock. So there's more of those deeper kinds of throws in this offense. And the offensive line has been a little bit of an up-and-down struggle this year, and he's been under a little more duress because the ball doesn't necessarily come out as quick within the structure of this style of offense. So while he's not had a bad year, there's been more what we would call negative plays that we're not used to seeing when he was in New England.
I want to talk about the Steelers. Obviously, in the NFL, Seattle and the New York Giants, I think, are better today than Week 2. I think the Bears and the Niners and the Steelers are worse than Week 2 or 3. Teams ebb and flow, right? Some of it with Pittsburgh is now Bud Dupree's now out for the year. Devin Bush is out. Two really, really high-end linebackers out.
Yeah.
And I watched them last night, but I want to talk about the running game specifically. You would have never wanted Big Ben at this point in his career to throw 51 times against RG3 in a MASH unit in Baltimore. They can't,
by choice. They didn't have to do that. That was by choice.
So let me ask you, is their run game – why can't – the Steelers, they have very good offensive line. You can't crowd the box because Ben will beat you deep. They have good receivers.
Right.
What is up with their running game? What is it?
Well, by choice, they're having Ben drop back an awful lot, Colin. You know, earlier in the season, there was a 3 or 4 week stretch where James Conner, and I know he's on the COVID list and hopefully he gets back okay, but there was a 3 or 4 week stretch where James Conner was very effective. He was averaging 17, 18 carries a game. Their run game looked pretty solid. Then he had a couple of games where it wasn't that good, and then it seems like they've totally abandoned it. I mean, look, what's sustainable and what's not sustainable is always open to debate with smart, reasonable people. To me, you don't want Ben Roethlisberger dropping back by choice 45, 50 times in a game.
Yes.
Now, a lot of their pass game is very quick game now and short. They do take their shots, but they try to get the ball out of Ben's hands pretty quickly. But I think they're going to need some kind of run game. I don't want to throw out the word balance because that's a cliche and it can mean many different things to many different teams. But I just don't think 50 dropbacks by choice is something you want to do every week.
Finally, our big play. Let's just talk Mahomes.
He's good.
Every great quarterback has a unique quality to them. Mahomes has something that I don't think I've ever seen. The back pedal, where he'll take a long, and he'll just keep, because he has so much confidence in his arm, he just keeps back pedaling. He just waits for the receiver to break. It's special to watch, and you saw it. I do wonder if Kansas City sometimes, because they score so brilliantly and quickly, if they're not urgent enough at times with their series. I guess it's a Golden State Warrior problem. When you can score so fast, you know, you can score so fast, you don't always play with urgency. But let's talk a little about Mahomes.
Well, he's pretty good. I mean, you know, we spoke about Rodgers earlier. I mean, I think you can easily make the case that Rodgers and Mahomes are the two best throwers in the game. And Mahomes is truly, truly special. And he's just one of those guys. There's really not a whole lot more to say about him. And, of course, he's getting better mentally the more he plays. And I think he's one of those guys that really understands how important that part of the game is. And certainly Andy Reid does. But he is just absolutely special as a thrower. And we're seeing him here throw. This was the first touchdown to Tyreek Hill. The play I want to show was actually the second touchdown to Tyreek Hill. And we can end up, and this is it right now. So let's actually take a look at this and we can break it down. So this was the second touchdown that we're talking about to Tyreek Hill. And this was something they do very, very often and they do very, very well. And what they do here is they line up in what we call a 1-by-3 set. And we call it a 1-by-3, not a 3-by-1, because it's the tight end who's the single receiver to the boundary side of the field opposite the trips. And here what the Bucs show, they show a 2-deep coverage, 2-man coverage, 2-deep safeties, and man-to-man across the board. But they will rotate to cover one, a single high man coverage with that safety taking the back. What's the matchup here? It's Tyreek Hill, Carlton Davis, and they love when Hill is in the inside slot to trips to run this deep over route. They'll run it against man. They'll run it against zone. It's a staple of theirs, and he just runs away from Carlton Davis. It's really not terrible coverage, but it's just very difficult to cover. In man coverage, he's running away from the deep safety, so the deep safety provides no help. So it's just a speed issue, and obviously Mahomes just put it right on him. But they're a very, very difficult defense, very difficult offense to defend.
Yeah. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, over 4 decades. Great seeing you again, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let's get right to Chris Broussard. Don't want to waste any time. The former New York Times sports writer, Fox Sports NBA analyst, now joining me live. Don't want to waste any time. Westbrook, John Wall trade. There was a draft pick. I don't care. It's the NBA draft. It's all about prospects anyway. I loved Westbrook. Over Wall is a trade piece. I mean, I think Westbrook's a much better player. Do you?
Yeah, so especially at this point. I mean, he was better than John Wall anyway. But John Wall hasn't played a game in almost 2 years. He hasn't played a full season in about 3 years. So we have no idea what he's going to come back with. The only guy you can point to who came back from an Achilles injury and was the same is Dominique Wilkins. Now, that's a good sign for Wall because Wilkins was athletic, explosive, as is Wall. But it's no guarantee he's going to be the same player. But even if he is, I think Washington won this trade because Westbrook makes them relevant. Yeah. Right? They haven't been relevant for a few years, out of the playoffs. Now you're must-see TV. Everybody wants to see what Westbrook and Bradley Beal can do.
Right.
They'll put shooters around him. They got Davis Bertrands, and they'll play off Westbrook and see what they can do. Look, I give them a shot to make the playoffs in the East, and this is what Westbrook has that Wall doesn't, even though both of them were explosive athletes. Westbrook plays with an aggressiveness and a ferocity that is so unique and so dynamic that it's an X factor for your team and for the opponent. It keeps the opponent off guard, off balance, because this dude is so unique and dynamic. And it's kind of like a boxer with a knockout punch.
Yeah, no.
He might not be technically sound,
right.
You know, can't do it. Deontay Wilder can't do much else, but he can always catch you. That threat is there, right? That's Westbrook. So at least you got that. I mean, you're not winning a championship in Washington, but you're relevant, you're sexy, you're a lot more fun than you were 2 days ago.
So LeBron and Anthony Davis are locked in now for a couple of years. A lot of stars in this league do not get along. Why do those two get along so well?
Well, one, LeBron is just, he's great at things like that. I mean, obviously he had his issues with Kyrie, but a lot of that was just Kyrie was the young gun and didn't want to hear from the older guy. But a lot of this, Colin, is where they're at in their career, okay? LeBron has done so much individually, winning championships. He's not threatened by AD whatsoever. So he's ready to mentor him. He doesn't mind if AD gets some shine or even the shine. At this point in his career, he's ready to mentor him. And when you bring two young guns together and they're both still climbing, that's when you often have problems. Shaq and Penny, they could have been one of the greatest duos ever, but they were both young guns and they were worried about who was getting the credit. In Philadelphia, the people will tell you that's the problem with Embiid and Simmons. Is that they're fighting for credit. Who's the man? Who's the star on the team? Shaq and Kobe obviously had success, but they were still both so close in age, both in their prime and young and climbing, that they butted heads about that. Kareem and Magic didn't know because Kareem had won a championship. He had his 5, 6 MVPs. Magic's rookie year was his 6th. And he had been a while without winning, so he didn't mind a young gun coming in and helping him. And Magic wasn't threatened by Kareem. It was more like a big brother, little brother relationship. And that's what this is. This is big brother, little brother versus two little brothers who are fighting for daddy's attention.
Right.
So I think that's a big part of why they do get along so well. And there's no threat there from each other.
You know, yesterday The Athletic broke a piece that was pretty remarkable on Kawhi, Paul George, the star treatment. And, you know, the NBA's got one king. It's King James. But there's a lot of guys that want the treatment like Paul George, and they don't have anything to show for it. Were you surprised by the animosity apparently behind closed doors with this Clippers team?
Well, I wasn't surprised just because I had been hearing it, you know, for the past few months that there were issues there, that it was really, you know, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams and Pat Beverly were bothered by the culture change where, you know, before those two, the two stars got there, they were the little engine that could. They had a culture, work your tail off, you know, and those three got a lot of shine, even though they weren't really stars. And then you bring Kawhi and Paul George in and everything changed culturally. And that was a problem. I was told, too, that, yeah, obviously some things Kawhi did rub guys the wrong way, not really practicing, not really being connected to the team, flying in and being late for flights coming from San Diego. Obviously, that rubs you the wrong way. But for the most part, guys, what I was told, were not as bothered by Kawhi because he delivered. If you're going to get star treatment, they all understand. They've been in the league long enough to know. There's star treatment for guys. But when you deliver, guys can live with it. Paul George wasn't delivering. When he's giving you 10 points in a playoff game, guys are going to be bothered by why are you getting this star treatment. I said this a few months ago. There were people on that roster that thought they were as good or better than Paul George. And I'm not talking about Kawhi. So they were the ones looking at it like, how is this dude getting all this special treatment? And I think I'm better than him, or at least as good as him. Why am I getting that? So that was the problem. But I tell you what, Colin, I think that they're going to be better for it this year. I think they'll be humbled. I think they'll be motivated. Obviously, they got Montrezl Harrell out. They think that's addition by subtraction. Serge Ibaka is a great chemistry guy, locker room guy. He's close with Kawhi. He can bring out the fun guy in Kawhi. So I think the Clippers will be better. People are writing them off at their own peril. Lakers should be the favorite, no question about it. But don't write off the Clippers just yet.
Chris Broussard, Odd Couple with Rob Parker. Always looks so well-appointed. So look at him. He's just very classy. You bring some dignity and class to our show, and it's certainly, from where I sit, it's certainly needed. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man. Love the show.